Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respect to elders past and present and the Aboriginal elders of other communities who may be listening today.
So welcome to the after show. Thanks so much for coughing up your money and tuning
us.
We have a bit to get through in this after show, so we'll get right into it. As we mentioned in the main episode, it is the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Riots, which really is what sparked. I mean, obviously there was activists working before the Stonewall Riots, but it's really what started and got the momentum going on the modern day LGBTI rights movements around the world.
Yeah.
Very exciting news is that the city of New York has announced that they will be erecting a statue in Greenwich Village, where Stonewall Inn is, where the Stonewall Riots happened, to honour Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera, to what we would now call trans activists who were very instrumental at that time.
The unsung heroes.
Exactly, yeah. Maybe a little bit of a recap, I guess, first.
Yeah. For Derek Barry and me.
How many people died?
Just tell me now.
Obviously, the 60s was a time of a lot of social change happening around the world, and huge movements for black rights and what was at the time called gay rights, but we would now probably call LGBTI rights. And one of the epicenters of all these movements was New York City, obviously, because of the population and just sort of the social makeup of the city. A lot of people that sort of felt like they were outcasts gravitated towards cities like New York and LA, and I guess on a small scale here in Australia, Sydney. So the Stonewall Riots was sort of the culmination of a lot of tension that was happening amongst the community in New York at the time. And there was a lot of bars, although it was illegal to be gay at the time, there was a lot of bars that the gays would hang out at, or the LGBTI community would hang out at. And the Stonewall was one of the well-known ones. It had a good connection with the mafia at the time.
They kind of protected them. Hey?
So they got tip-offs. It was run by the mafia, the Stonewall. And they'd get tip-offs from cops when there was going to be a raid. And so they would kick everyone out and everyone would do runners or hide or whatever. This one particular night, there wasn't a tip-off. And that's what started the Stonewall riot. So it lasted 3 nights, lots of violence really galvanized the community, I guess. And then a year later was the first ever New York Pride Parade, and the first ever Mardi Gras was a show of solidarity, which turned into our own riot and protest and arrests and things here.
So that was 1969. When was Mardi Gras, the first one again?
The first Sydney one was 1978, which of course was supposed to be a peaceful protest, which the cops raided, as we've discussed, and turned into a violent situation as well. What happened at Stonewall really set off a lot of movements around the world, and we owe a lot to the people that were there. And the people that were there were the outcasts, really.
Poor people.
Lots of people of colour. A lot of kids have been kicked out of home or whatever for being gay or lesbian or trans. Now, when I before said what we would now call trans, I don't want to take anything away from Marsha P. Johnson or Sylvia Rivera. The term trans or transsexual wasn't really colloquially used at all. In fact, both of these women started a group called the Street Transvestite Action Revolutionaries, or STAR, which homed trans youth. But, but even then, they weren't themselves using the term trans. So I don't want to take anything away from the fact that they were trans. If they were alive and living today, they would most likely identify as trans. It's just that that's not a term that was used at the time.
I read a thing saying the P in her name was referenced to Pay It No Mind.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, really? She would say, just pay it no mind. I'm just a queen.
The P sense. Yeah.
And I do think it was a product of that time, because there are so many conflicting reports and there's a need for some definitive history around this event, because it's been so instrumental in our rights and our history. But the truth of the matter is just because of the time, some things are just going to be...
I quite like the theory. Yeah, she famously, apparently she was arrested an estimated 100 times for sex work. And apparently one of the times in court, the judge asked her what the P stands for and she said, pay it no mind.
Yeah.
And he chuckled and let her off with a lighter sentence.
So good.
Because he found it quite charming. But I feel like now we're very quick to sort of separate the different letters of and sort of claim, well, this person was one of us. Well, this person was one of us, that sort of thing.
Segregation.
And at the time, it wasn't really that big a thing because people were just genuinely just trying to look out for each other and fight together to do what they could do. We weren't as segregated.
No.
And I feel like it's a bit of a shame that now we try and sort of argue who's got it worse or who did what for who and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I think it ties into the class discussion we were talking about previously and in the last bonus episode, actually. I think a lot of these class divides didn't exist back then because
within the community,
there was no space for it.
Well, no, everybody was sort of oppressed equally in a sense.
They're always kind of
all just thrown into that one bag of queer freaks, whatever.
There was no room for us to divide amongst ranks at that stage. So, in some ways, it ties into the last after show because the more I think about it, it's like this is kind of an evolution of human social structures anyway, is that as we gain more space around us as a community, unfortunately a downside of that is that divides do emerge.
Many divides. I mean, even within just the G, there's so many genre of gay men.
There's a lot of like controversy about who threw the first brick and that sort of thing. Marsha's own story was that she arrived at 2 a.m. after the riots had started. It's generally agreed that the fight itself started from a butch self-identifying butch lesbian drag king who was at the bar who threw the first punch. Marsha did drop bricks from, this is actually fucking amazing, climbed a street lamp and dropped a bag of bricks onto a police car and smashed the windscreen of the police car, which is fucking incredible. Wow. Also done with the gorgeous flowers in her hair.
That would be an amazing thing to watch.
Like hauling a bag of bricks on
it. Like, amazing person. But you can definitely say that she was instrumental in starting the movement that started the Stonewall riots, along with Sylvia Rivera.
Yeah.
Sylvia had marched with the Black Panthers that were instrumental in the Black Rights Movement in the States leading up to the LGBTI rights movement. And as I said, both of them started STAR to help homeless trans youth and were activists in every sense of the word, but also came into that from a place of experience. These weren't sort of, you know, we think now of sort of activists as being sort of the rich people giving a little bit of money to the poor people, whatever. These were people that lived on the streets that were sex workers for out of necessity. In fact, the term used was survival sex. So sex for not necessarily always money and not because it was a choice of becoming a sex worker. It was literally having to have sex for either somewhere to stay for the night or for enough cash to buy whatever. It wasn't the choice of becoming a sex worker. It was this or nothing. Like, and faced a lifetime of discrimination, not only because of being non-binary, but also because of the colour of her skin and being an outspoken person. Right up until her death, and including her death as well, in I think it was 1992, was found a couple of days after a pride parade floating in the Hudson River and was quickly written off by the police as a suicide. And a lot of her close friends were saying, well, she wasn't suicidal. Like, she definitely had issues. Like, she had a rough life. And there was definitely episodes, especially when presenting physically as a man without makeup and outfits and whatever, would have these sort of very stressful periods of aggravation and stuff, but was never suicidal. And it took some time, but activists had her case reopened because they said, well, hang on, she had lacerations on the back of her head. People saw her being picked on by these, like, hooligans that were, you know, going around bashing people and robbing shit off them and that sort of thing. Why are we assuming that this was a suicide? So even then it was just easy for the police to sort of write it off as a suicide and forget about it. So I think that this statue to commemorate these two amazing people is, you know, fucking amazing. Hell also amazing that the New York Police Department have just apologized for what happened at the Stonewall.
And they didn't Barack Obama name the Stonewall in like a national monument?
Yeah.
It's like the first gay history national monument.
I assume so. I'm not sure. But he definitely made it a part of the, they call it the Monuments and Parks Department, I think it's called in the States. But made it a national monument, because of its importance.
Is it still a running like in, or is it just kind of like a monument you can go see now?
No,
like,
it's still a place like you can work go there and stuff. And, yeah, people work there.
I mean, like it's not just like a museum. It's like
is it a dream? Because correct me if I'm wrong, there is already a statue commemorating the riots. Is that correct? But it's like a non-specific person. Like,
oh,
it's not,
I think you're right, actually. There might be some, of someone sitting in a park bench or something.
Yeah,
like that,
or like solidarity with police. Like, the thing that's really important to me about them adding this new statue is that they're depicting people of color.
Yeah.
Because as far as I remember, there is sort of a monument there or some sort of tribute statue, but it's of some nondescript white people, basically.
Right. Yeah. I do know it's the first permanent statue erected in the world of a transgender person in memory of a real transgender person. So, yeah, maybe that's what you were thinking of.
Yeah.
Like we've talked about before, it's really important for us to remember our history. Mm-hmm. And 50 years is not that long a period of time.
No.
It
doesn't seem like that long.
You know, there's not
like
a lot of people that know the name, sadly. Not a lot of people that know these names. You know, they're the Rosa Parks of our movement. Absolutely. We really, that should be the first names that pop into our mind when we start talking about our rights and that sort of thing. And so if in 50 years that people have been able to sort of forget
imagine.
We need to be building statues and we need to be talking about these people, because unfortunately our education system's not going to do it. And like I've talked about before, our community is one of the few communities in the world. You don't learn your history from your parents. You need to go out and find your history, and you need to learn it from your queer elders.
Research.
And talk to people at bars and read their stories and listen
to
podcasts and that sort of thing.
I just realized this is probably going to be the first generation of gay parents.
Well,
like the
true.
First mainstream generation of
it's
gay
true.
Couples with children that will pass on.
It will, but they're not passing on their sexuality.
I saw the cutest kids book the
Unless
other day.
The kid is
explaining
gay.
Like gay marriage and stuff. It was the sweetest book. I was like, I need to buy this just for like a kid. That
did you finish it or?
I'm still on it. Like I'm calling outside the lines.
But we will have parents, but again, it's not your Filipino. You learn your Filipino history from your Filipino parents because it's passed on generationally. My parents are gay, and even if my parents were gay, I probably wouldn't be gay. Do you know what I mean? It's not something that we inherit, and we need to go out and find this information, and because our schools aren't teaching this information, we need to have other ways of teaching it to the young LGBTI people,
like very accessible.
So that these mistakes don't happen again, so that we don't become complacent,
and we don't have straight pride.
Fucking risk their lives, and
we see straight pride.
Because there were people that genuinely put their lives on the line who already were not coming from an advantaged place.
No. Did anyone see the Stonewall movie?
No. There's a movie.
Is that Milk?
No, Milk's
fantastic. Okay. But no,
I saw Milk.
I didn't see it because I saw it copped a lot of flack for whitewashing the story. And, you know, I don't want to speak about it at length because I haven't seen it.
Mm.
But the reports I've heard is we are also getting versions of this story that are diluted. That's another thing that we need to be mindful of is that there are real people and there are real events, because I know it's very easy to just go out and watch a movie or like watch something on YouTube, for example.
Yeah.
For all accounts, that is a story about a white cis gay man,
man
at Stonewall, and doesn't fully incorporate the culture or the struggles of others within our community. Countering that, though, Paris is Burning is a film that does show a not very popular side of gay culture, or something that's not widely discussed or sort of shared amongst our community, which is that very low income, almost poor, black, trans and non-binary community. I just think it's a real shame that film exists without any of those elements being a core part of it.
We're talking about conspiracy theories in the main episode tonight, and there is one around this night that many people believe, and I will be honest, believed for a long time because it's such a nice story that you want to be true.
What you're gonna say.
The Judy Garland's funeral story.
Is that what they said on RuPaul, and everyone's like, wait, what?
Yeah, so look, a lot of people genuinely believe this, and I heard it when I was 18 and first joined the gay scene, and I thought it was how it started as well. So Judy Garland's funeral was happening in New York at the same time.
Okay.
And the story goes that all of the people from Judy's funeral went to the Stonewall riots, and that's how it started. And even the theory sometimes extends to that's how the rainbow flag started, because they had rainbows because of Somewhere Over the Rainbow from The Wizard of Oz. It's been pointed out
nice
that whilst... it's a lovely story. It's a very lovely story. Yeah, it was referenced on RuPaul's, I think. It's a very lovely story. It's true that Judy's funeral was happening at the same time in New York, but it's been pointed out that was like on the upper...
Because they spoke very like factually about it on RuPaul. Like, this is what happened.
No, it's been pointed out that was happening on the Up North side, that it was would have been very ritually. Mm-hmm. Yes, there would have been quite a few gay people at Judy's funeral, and perhaps some of them decided to go down to Stonewall and Greenwich Village afterwards, and maybe some of them were there, but by no means would the majority of Judy Garland's funeral. And when the riot started, the wealthy elites would have been the first to run, because if they got caught, they would have had a lot more to lose than these poor homeless kids that were hanging out for somewhere warm and safe to stay. But yeah, again, that's sort of a nice whitewashing story that you can tell to sort of give you a nice little Hollywood version of what happened at Stonewall.
Yeah, I think we are getting to a point where our history is going to get modernized and like sort of whitewashed and dumbed down. So reminders like this statue, for example, are sort of permanent fixtures in our culture and our community that, for lack of a better word, cements Marsha P. Johnson as a person that exists.
Do we know where they're going to put it? Did you say already?
No, they haven't announced yet, but they said it will be in Greenwich.
They don't have an artist attached to it yet.
So they've promised the money, and they're looking for the exact location of the artist that's going to be doing it, but it will be somewhere near Stonewall Inn. And while we're on the topic, everyone look up the Tasty Raids that happened in Melbourne. I think it would be nice to have some sort of, not on the same scale, maybe not statues or whatever, but something commemorating the Tasty Raids that happened in Melbourne, because we had a much smaller population at the time and didn't have our version of Mardi Gras or Stonewall exactly, but the Tasty Raids was a turning point for our rights.
I like history.
So and this isn't that long ago, this was in the 90s. It was raided by the police, locked the doors, turned the lights on, queue everyone up, strip search everyone without warrants.
And when was this, sorry?
This was only in the 90s. Which was, were you alive, Kyle?
What?
94?
Yes. Yeah. 91. Yeah. Thank 91. You very much.
So, so you're even a liar. That's how recent this is, and people don't know about it.
Wow.
And then dozens and dozens of people were arrested for, possession of small amounts of drugs and whatever. They didn't know what to do with the drag queens, so they kept them for hours because they didn't know whether the male police officers or the female police officers should be strip searching them. So they made them lock them up in the drag dressing room or something like that.
At least they had to consider it, that they weren't
the reason it was done and the way it was handled was pretty disgusting. Terrible. But what came out of that is very brave people taking the Victoria Police to court and then a full investigation into the entire thing and an overhaul and revamp of how the Victoria Police deals with the LGBTI community, which eventually led to them marching in Pride and that sort of thing. Obviously had some positives that came out of it, but we need to remember why and how those positives came and what people had to go through for us to get what we have now.
Huh. Well, that's it for our after show. Thanks so much for listening.
Thank you so much. Patrons are the lovely people who give us money to listen to extra stuff.
Well, thanks for doing it, whoever you are. As we said in the main
episode, we know who you are because we're following you.
As we said in the main episode, we don't have any main episodes coming up for the next 2 weeks, but we will still have Patreon episodes. So,
absolutely. So look forward to that, everyone.
Log in and check them out.
Wow, and we might be on some other podcasts.
Yes.
Who knows?
No. So until then, bye.
Bye.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Well, welcome to our first ever after show of The Gays Are Revolting. Yeah. Thanks so much for coughing up the money and, well, for being our subs,
much
I guess.
For being our subs, I love it. Yeah. But no, all the money that you are pledging really does help the show, and it helps us sort of progress further down the track.
Yeah.
Do more live shows.
We're so grateful.
More live shows, helps us with our transport, yeah. Helps us get wine drunk
Poor
during
Kyle
the show.
Has to go.
I live on the south side, people.
I know. When I went to your
very
house
difficult
the other day,
me.
It was like a $40 Uber ride to get
to the most to be on this podcast.
So it does help a lot. And also, of course, yeah. The merchandise and stuff that we want to sell.
Yes.
We genuinely
the merch.
Thank you.
Genuinely appreciate it.
I can start taking my ADHD medication.
Oh, we can get back on his meds.
We would really like it if that happened.
Put a roof over our heads.
Everybody wins.
Anyway, we started sort of talking about this at the end of the last episode, but just to sort of recap, I want to talk about class in the gay community, broader LGBTI community as well, but our experiences in the gay community. And I want to start, let's just put it out there, the Sydney Gays podcast. If anyone missed it, it is a podcast by Jay Fisher and Will Sabin. Look, I don't want to... I think they've been torn apart enough on social media.
Yeah, for sure.
But basically what happened is they sort of billed it as being a podcast for the whole LGBTI community. And the feeling that Twitter seemed to have was that it was a podcast for inner city, Sydney, wealthy, muscly...
White. It was a no bueno. Queens.
It was a no bueno.
Now, I don't want to pick apart their podcast on the show now, but basically it did sort of highlight sort of a class difference in...
Got a lot of people talking.
It did. Yeah. And it was, it was trending around Twitter. We were talked about whether or not we should talk about it because we don't want to have a go at them, but it was, one of the biggest conversations in the gay apocalypse. The gay Australian space. So I think it's worth mentioning. But on a broader spectrum, do you feel that there is still class divides? For example, I mean, we all live in Melbourne. What about Melbourne? Do you see that happening?
Definitely.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a class war.
Yeah.
There is a class war going on every day for, multiple different parts of our community. And I think one of the things people like about our show and that has seen us get a lot of praise is that we can't escape that classism in a lot of the topics, and we're not afraid to address that comes into play. Mm. We talked about the differences between the letters in our alphabet, the LGs and the Bs and the Ts, and there's a class divide there.
I mean, I think that's the most obvious one is the class divide between the different variations of the LGBTI community.
Yeah.
I mean, we're so lucky to be, there is privilege that comes with being male.
Absolutely.
Yes, it might be hard being a gay male, but then the struggles that a young trans person is going through is statistically a lot worse than a gay male person.
We live in a country where we're told almost constantly by not only the media, but the general consensus that no, these issues don't exist in our society because we are the land of the plenty, and I appreciate the opportunities afforded to me living here in Australia. I love
it.
But it's so hard sometimes to reconcile the message that you get on a daily basis from the Australian public at large to how you feel inside being a double minority or for some people a triple minority where you go, this shit literally exists. You just can't see it.
That's my everyday life.
And I think these gay apocalypses that keep happening, things like the Poof Doof drama and the Sydney Gays podcast, unfortunately, whenever they come up, you go, suddenly this thing that I feel on a daily basis is on a macro level and everybody's seeing it. Mm-hmm. And it highlights that it exists on a day-to-day basis, but just not in these huge bursts.
Mm.
And when they do, it's very apparent to everyone. But there are these quieter class wars
every day,
that happen every day.
And it
day.
Even, I mean, when you if we're talking about the Melbourne as an example, just the north side, south side thing is very much a class
thing.
No, but it's true. There is very much a, are you a south side? That's one of the first questions. Mm-hmm. When someone's moving to Melbourne, their north side friends will be trying to be like, oh, don't move south
don't
side.
Move
The south side queens will be saying, oh, don't move north side. They're all, absolutely. I think it's something that happens every single day.
And that's definitely something that I've experienced because I've lived south and north. Mm-hmm. And when I live south, they were just like, oh, you're very north side. And it's like, what? Like, what are you even talking about? And then I moved to the north and I was like, here are my people. Okay, I get it now.
They were right, though.
But maybe what we need to be trying to do then is not sort of think of ourselves as better for being part of a different group. There is a huge difference.
Except
there is a noticeable difference between gay people that live in Fitzroy and the gay people that live in South Bay. And that is fine. But maybe
I like living in the south, but here I am.
And that difference might be the venues we have. They are very different. different venues. The style, the fashion styles, the fashion choices,
the type of people you surround
yourself
with, the kind of people,
the kind of and the kind of drag shows that you have. It's a very noticeable. The kind of restaurants that we have on the two different sides. It's a very noticeable difference of what is popular on the north side, what is popular on the south side of Melbourne. For those people that have no idea what we're talking about, there is a river that runs through Melbourne. You're from one or the other side.
It's like Game of Thrones. It's like War of the Kingdoms.
Basically, and I just can't wait to see Kyle flying through on that drag and like, just going down Smith Street and Fitzroy. See you 86. See you Circuit. Back. See you Peel. Stopping in by Wet on Wellington. But yeah, maybe that's what we need to do, is to sort of stop thinking I'm better than them because I'm part of this one, and just sort of going, yeah, this is my thing, but that's their thing.
Living on the south side, I've noticed a lot of rich gay kids. I grew up not coming from like exceptional wealth or anything, and I have definitely noticed, more so in Melbourne, like coming from Brisbane, I didn't really know anyone like that, but there's a definite group of people in Melbourne, and they come from all these like really posh families. And I can't help but get bitter about it sometimes. For, like, they just had everything kind of handed to them. They've got like all the uni educations. They haven't really had to work at all. I had to work all throughout my uni. They claim that it's all their own work, and they're like, oh, I worked for this Mercedes Benz that I just bought like after I've turned 22.
Like, did you? Like,
But it is frustrating at times, and I do notice that they are quite clicky. Not all of them for sure, but I do see a lot of people, and they kind of just stick with their own kind.
Absolutely.
And to try and break into a group like that, if I mean, if that's even what you'd want to do, but it can be difficult to kind of mix it up and merge. Yeah,
part of the problem is, I mean, none of the four of us are wealthy people compared to the people we're talking about. We are lucky to have more money than other people, but we're not nowhere near that kind of wealth.
Opulence.
One of the important things to remember is, though, they actually aren't all that bad. A few of my friends that I have on I don't want to stereotype, but they are Southside Melbourne guys, are well off. But those people are also, in my world, you know, they'll always make sure that they buy a ticket for a show that I'm putting on. They'll always make sure that if they're out with friends that don't have as much money, that without being sort of condescending, they will buy some drinks. If they're putting on one of their little lunch parties, they'll make sure that they're putting on the food and the drinks. They're not expecting people to come up. So there are good people in that section. Yeah. But I do know that it can exactly be what you're saying. And I guess it's sort of the people that won't make friends with people that don't have money.
You get a certain type.
I think there's a difference between having money and then creating a class divide by using your money.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of people that have money that you just would never know that they're financially well off. And I think the issue that we're having with these gaps and divides between the different parts of our community and the problematic people that we're discussing at the moment are the ones where it's immediately apparent how much money they have, because they've made you feel some sort of way about how much money you have.
That was something that I felt the very first time that I went to the Emerson, and it's been the only time that I've ever been to the Emerson where I saw that day.
When you threw up in the bushes.
Yeah, you really were making an in with the elite Southside Queens.
Throwing up in the bushes. Hi, how's it going? But no, that was something very apparent when we walked in the room, because Josh and I, like a couple of our good friends, and we're all Northsiders, and like we made a point to make sure we looked the part, because we were just like, we're going to the Emerson, it's for a friend's birthday, let's make sure that we look incredible. And we fucking did, and it was great.
But you could feel the
divide, like the moment we walked in, because they checked us out.
There's definitely, you do get these stereotypes there, but I just, I feel like I'm standing up just for people I know. No. But the Emerson, you know, popular Sunday afternoons, evening thing. Absolutely. In Melbourne. Also, you know, you've got your wonderful like Ollie and Dawn and those sorts of people that are there as well. And I don't know what their personal financial situation is, but they're very good people, and they hang out at that venue too. Us just putting up that instant wall of, well, that's where rich kids go. It doesn't do any good to sort of segregate us further. And that does bring us back a little bit to the Sydney Gays podcast. Again, I don't want to tear into them. That first episode, let's be honest, it was shit. We all talked about it. Maybe if it had been billed as, here is a podcast for the people that they are, then that would be good. We have made no pretense on our podcast to try and talk on behalf of other people in the community. We are four gay men doing a show for gay people.
Careful to,
I just think it's don't try and speak on other people's behalf. And I think the problem was that they billed it as speaking on behalf of the whole LGBTI community, and definitely didn't. Yes, it wasn't a good podcast, and it got a huge backlash, But then I saw this other sort of class divide of perhaps the intellectuals or what we in Melbourne would call the North Side Queens going for them on Twitter to the point where they were trending on Twitter.
Yeah.
And that was almost a class thing as well of being like, oh, it's almost like a woke class.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I know what you're
saying. And I don't think that helps in any way. Yeah, okay, they deserve to be sort of told that first episode was shit. Side note, I'm very impressed that after the response, because they had pre-recorded several episodes, they've thrown them in the bin and they went back and re-recorded and took advice from people. I think that's a really, really impressive thing. But yeah, the backlash to it also felt classy as well and sort of felt like we were making that divide even bigger.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, not to argue, but I'm never... If we're talking about not talking on behalf of other people, I know a lot of the backlash towards them. Also, they should have just built it as a comedy podcast. So that would have been fine. Was coming from people of color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is totally fair enough. Yeah,
which is totally fair for them to go to town on that show. And people from lower socioeconomic backgrounds.
Yeah,
that
of course they're going to feel ostracized by that podcast.
When you feel that kind of ostracization on a daily basis and you have no confirmation of it to be able to go, no, look at this. This is it. It's over here. Yeah. They're all sort of communicated to you via microaggressions or feelings. Like Mikey at the bar is like you felt it.
It was not a direct thing, but the energy that you feel off of others.
Yeah. So I can relate to when something tangibly is there in front of us that we can point at and go, this is a thing that makes us feel not a part of the community.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think that's why we saw that backlash is because... people felt that way. They felt like, why do these guys think that they know anything about it?
Like they could finally have their say and get it out.
Yeah.
All the stuff.
I just sort of feel like once it was trending on Twitter for 2 days, I'm not saying that these people didn't have a right to say the stuff that they were saying. Mm-hmm. I just sort of tweets like, oh, this podcast gave me Ebola, or this podcast. I just saw one that said, this podcast gave me my first ever STD. That's not how, I don't know. It's not
constructive. It gets
some of the tweets I saw were genuinely people giving serious constructive feedback. And I thought that was...
Build people up.
Right, you know.
Yeah. It was very refreshing to see that not everyone was going in and just like on the hate train.
Yeah.
That some people actually did care. They're like, look, you missed the mark. Like, it wasn't good, but where do we go from here?
Yeah.
This is how you can fix it. And I think they have taken some of that on board. They've, they've released stuff. They've cut out the jingle at the beginning. And they've got a lot of people's attention now. Yeah. Now it's up to them what they do with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some people just want to read too.
Yeah.
Some people just want to jump on and be...
They're waiting for it.
I get it. Look, there were several tweets that I drafted that never posted, but what is it going to help at the end of the day? Is it going to help if it's just a nasty, funny thing that you want to do, be the first person to sort of say something funny about it? Yeah. I get that you want to vent. Maybe just send it in a DM to somebody.
When it
my DMs are going off like crazy, but
when it comes to the show, the Sydney podcast, I always think if you've got nothing nice to say, like don't say anything. Yeah. So I have nothing to say.
No comment.
No comment.
But then sort of look at other styles of class as well. And maybe something that all four of us benefit from in Australia is geographical class. I'm sure that there are definitely gay people or just generally queer people in rural areas that sort of look at us living in Fitzroy and Elsternwick and going, oh, why are they whinging about...
I don't live in Elsternwick.
Sorry, where do you live?
Armidale,
whatever. It's all the same.
Wait a second.
I was like,
he doesn't live in Elsternwick.
I was like, who lives there?
I went there like 3 days ago. I'm so bad at geography. But there's probably listening to us having this conversation going, how pathetic to be arguing over what side of a river you live on.
Yeah.
Where I live,
must be nice.
I just have to try and get home before it's dark because it's not safe for me to be out at night or get the shit beaten out of me.
Absolutely.
So there is, we're very privileged also to be geographically located where we are in the city of Melbourne.
A lot scarier for us in rural places.
Yeah, absolutely.
People live in countries where what we do is illegal and they would die.
Yeah. Or even greater once we go out of Australia.
Yeah. So for me, when it comes to the class differences and the divides between us, is to always reflect inwards and know where you stand in the world and in the community in a broader sense. Mm-hmm. Where does your privilege put you?
Yeah.
And you have to take into account things that may not appear to be a privilege to you, like the color of your skin, for example, because it's just something you were born with.
Yeah.
You have to take stock of all of those things, I honestly think, on a daily basis, and put that in comparison to where you are, to the other members of the community,
mm-hmm. yeah.
close to you, and then on a larger scale, mm-hmm. because we're a global world now.
yeah.
Twitter and et cetera means we no longer just have to worry about what is happening mm-hmm. next door to us or in mm-hmm. our suburb. We have to worry about what's happening to our community on a global scale.
Yeah.
And then take that knowledge and filter your reactions and your actions through it, mm-hmm. I feel. And so whenever I'm here recording or whenever I'm engaging in a conversation with someone, I need to take stock of the fact that, I get to live in Australia.
Mm.
I've had a decent, somewhat decent education.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm, I have a roof over my head.
You have good health
support. Healthcare. Yeah.
I don't want to put any words in your mouth as a white person. It's not my job to decide what's racist and what's not racist. Yeah. I am very happy to learn that from other people. But I imagine, you sort of touched on race there, must be difficult for people of colour on the gay scene is representation on a mm-hmm. micro level rather than, we're very aware of the macro level in mm. Hollywood films or television yeah. shows or news presenters, all that sort of shit.
Yeah.
But also, if I look at a poster for a club promoting a special night, mm-hmm. chances are the muscly guy on that poster is going to be white. Or if I look at the queens in a lineup at a drag show, whilst we have some amazing queens of colour coming through at the moment, generally speaking, they are going to be white. So the physical scene itself, I imagine for you guys, there's probably that hanging over. Would that be correct? Yeah,
definitely. I mean, just going into a gay club, knowing that what people write on apps is like no fams, no fats, no gays, no Asians, whatever.
Of course, yeah.
Like walking into a crowd of white
and then wondering gay men,
out of you all do I have to avoid or who out of you all am I approaching that I'm going to get this backlash off of you? Like all publications of any sort of gay event, well, not all, but like majority, it is white men.
Mm.
Like that's what you see. Like you don't see biracial people. But in saying that as well, like being a biracial person, you sort of need to check your privilege at the same level.
Mm.
I think everybody does.
Yeah.
Regardless, there's the argument that the trans men have it easier than trans women. You know, there's everyone needs to be just looking in and saying, how can I help out my fellow man,
We do have an Asian pit crew member on RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yes, we do.
Very exciting.
There's the one.
Great, so that's been our first after show.
It's been a heavy one.
Done it.
It's been good.
Good work. And thank you so much for pledging to the people who are listening.
Well as the after shows, we will have other little surprises over the course of time. We'll let you know when they do.
Tell your friends.
And I promise to start taking my medication. Next week, if you pledge...
Do you want Luke to die?
Do you want me to be less annoying next episode? Then pay me $6.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much.
Should I have a different bye for the after show?
Should it be like a low octave, like boy?
I'm not participating.
Okay. Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.